White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 493.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins! Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello! And welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with TheWarEagleReader.com, and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family. You people out there, you are our AU Wishbone family, our Patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, in addition to being excited about our big win and our big game coming up in just a few days, man, we went from no football to wall-to-wall and treetop-tall football, didn't we?
We did.
I'm excited about that, but I'm also excited that I'm just discovering that I just installed a new arm here in the Palatial White Rocket Studios for my microphone, and I'm discovering that it is allowing me to look up and straight ahead rather than down at my microphone on the desk, and it is changing my breathing patterns, and it is changing my voice inflection a little bit. So this is very interesting. I didn't even dream that this little adjustment would affect me so much, but this is pretty cool. I should have done this years ago. Do I sound all right on your end?
Sound great.
Great. Well, you sound good, too. I tweaked the engineering on the digital a little bit to kind of bring you up a little louder on the in the mix, so that way we're kind of more balanced. I usually do it on the back end, but I thought I'd bring it up in the mix. So we'll see how that goes too. So I'm anxious to see if any of our listeners have any feedback about our sound this week, because again, I'm trying a few things that are different this week. Okay. Anyway, John, we not only had Auburn football back, we had a win. So what were your thoughts kind of happening on Saturday?
It was great to have college football back. It was great to have Auburn football back. And it was great to win a game early and then just be able to enjoy the rest of the day stress-free and kind of watch the other SEC games and laugh at them when they were struggling.
That's the truth. Well, and we got a lot to say about those, too. I mean, I was particularly excited for the Mississippi State LSU game because people kept saying, you know, and I'm going to save it for when we get to that section, but I just want to say, people kept saying, oh, LSU's losing all these players, but they're still LSU. And I'm like, are you still LSU if you lose almost your entire team? Really? Are you really? That's putting an awful lot of burden on those freshmen and backups to just suddenly magically be a national championship caliber team. And I knew the Pirate would have something for him, and I think he did. So we'll have a good time talking about that a little bit later on in the show. But first, Auburn and Kentucky, I mean, we waited quite a long time. Can I just go ahead and say, if I never, ever have another multiple Saturdays where the best games in the entire weekend, and I use best loosely here, involve Arkansas State or UAB or South Alabama, I'll be happy if I never again have multiple weekends like that. Because it
you know what? I view it like that early bowl period. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The Poinsettia Bowl or the Boca Raton Bowl, whatever. It's fine.
It's true.
It's like the appetizers before the meal.
You know, I would agree 100%. You're right in a way, okay? I think you make a good point, but my only caveat to that is that usually when we're getting those games, we've just had the big football games. Whereas this year, we were having the Boca Raton Bowl after 10 months of nothing. it's not You're quite fair. The same. It's not quite. It's like if you've been out in the desert crawling through the sand for a month with no food and water, and they offer you a thin mint, you know? I'm like, no. Give me the thin mint after the meal. I don't want that as my appetizer, okay? Go ahead and bring me out some cheese sticks, man. Bring me out some toasted ravioli. You know, bring me something like that. Chicken fingers. I don't want a thin mint as the first thing I have after being out in the desert all this time. So, all right, well, let's look at the Kentucky game a little bit. It was interesting because it seemed like the national experts were fairly evenly divided on whether Auburn would even win or not, which is just the general disrespect that, to be fair, I guess we have earned a little skepticism along the way over the years, maybe, mm-hmm. but still kind of ticked me off. So I thought Auburn looked as good on both sides of the ball, particularly the offense, about as good in their first game as anybody has in their first game so far. Would you agree or disagree?
Absolutely. No, I thought Auburn was, for the first game and what we've seen this season with the way teams have played the first game, Auburn was very well prepared. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have the big mistakes. They didn't turn the ball over. They only missed three tackles on defense. The special teams are really good. We've seen a lot of games where the special teams blew up in people's faces. I thought Auburn was very well prepared, and I think it says a lot about the practices the coach has been running the last few weeks.
Yeah, that's kind of what was my reading, too, was that the coaches must have really figured out a pretty effective way to teach over the last few months because they look crisp. I was expecting sloppier than normal first game, and Auburn first games have not historically been super crisp to begin with, right? So I was
seeing some failure to execute in the first game.
We have. I thought this was as crisp as an Auburn team has ever looked in a first game, honestly. There may have been some they were a little better, but then in those games they generally were playing like Ball State or somebody.
No, I think that's fair.
Yeah, so I was very impressed with that. Well prepared, yeah, and didn't turn the ball over.
Yeah, it's big.
That was the difference.
And it's one of those things that I think, Bo Nix struggled on the road last year, and I think it's one of the things that people have kind of lost track of is he didn't make a. I mean, he made some bad mistakes on the road at Florida and LSU, but a lot of times he may not make the big positive play, but a lot of times he doesn't hurt the team. You know what I'm
right.
saying?
And I yeah.
think, in this game particularly, like he didn't do anything bad and he did a lot of good.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. And then even in the first half when we were kind of struggling a little bit, you had that sense that they were it's kind of weird. It's like Kentucky seemed to be outplaying us to a certain degree in the first half, but it never felt like because we were playing really badly, it felt like Kentucky was just doing some good things, you know? Am I crazy? Mm-hmm.
No. They had a good plan. They're well coached. They came out and they have a lot of experienced players. They came out and executed their plan well on offense and caught Auburn a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first half, it was more about them making plays at the beginning of the game. And then things settled down and Auburn adjusted and eliminated those things.
I felt like even though we only had 8 points at the half, when I felt like we should have had more and we did a few, not sloppy things, but we just made a few mistakes maybe, or they stopped us, to be fair. I felt like holding them to 7, as well as they were moving the ball most of the first half, was kind of a win.
Huge. You're right. I mean, this is the other thing. Like, they played pretty well in that game, and they scored 13 points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's I wanted to see, like, their quarterback threw for 239 yards, more than
by also, six. Look at how many pass attempts he had.
37, yeah.
I mean, if you told him he had 37 pass attempts, they'd say, we've lost. We got blown out.
Yeah. Yeah, they spread. But it's interesting. Both teams didn't really have a dominating running back. In fact, they only had one play that kind of made one of their running backs stand out because he had a 35-yard run.
Mm-hmm.
And so it looked like both teams kind of spread the running game around. Neither game really had a dominant back to kind of take over. So that's kind of why it kind of turned into a slugfest kind of in the middle there. And then in the second half, we saw it seemed like adjustments on both sides of the ball. Now, we know the defense did a few things different. They the defense adjusted to what Eddie Grand was, good old Eddie Grand, right? They adjusted a little. Steele adjusted a little bit to what he was doing. We can talk about that. But also, it seemed like in the past, Gus would have said, We got to come out and run the ball in the second half. We got to establish the run. They didn't really do that. They came out and leaned even heavier on the pass.
Yeah. No, you're right. There was none of that kind of what we in the past referred to as kind of the pig-headed Gus running the ball. There was none of that.
No. I mean, it felt like in the first half we ran the ball some, just feeling them out, just saying we could. Mm-hmm. But never really to the point of trying to, quote, establish it, unquote. And in the second half, we kind of said, screw it, throw the ball to Seth.
That's it.
It worked. I mean, you can't. If there was one thing that I felt Chad Morris's influence on in that game, I know there were, you know, formation differences and pass pattern differences and all that. But to me, the real number one influence of him that I felt in the game was in that. Just a completely different mindset going into halftime, coming out, and how we treated the running game. Now, in future games, we may think that's not a great idea, but it seemed to work out here. I don't know. What do you think? I mean, is that cool with you? Are you okay with just saying, let's just throw the ball and,
What's the strength of the offense? The mm-hmm. strength of the offense is Bo Nix to Seth Williams. That's the strength of the offense. Everything else can flow from that. So, let's beat teams over the head with that and make them, shift everybody to take that away. And then we can run the ball. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, are we going to have – if Seth's going to have double coverage, it's going to be easier for everybody else to do things.
There's these sayings. I guess I'm gonna say give them Seth till they – till they're smoking crystal meth, because they can't stop Seth, man. They can't. He didn't just dominate. I tweeted that he mistreated that poor young man on the other team.
He did.
Well, that guy, to be fair, that guy had actually, I think it was him, that had actually kind of shoved him earlier. There was a Kentucky defensive back. It was the same one, right? I don't know if it was Seth that he shoved.
No, he shoved Capers, but it was the same guy. And he was talking a lot of crap.
Okay. Capers had a good catch, 17-yard catch. I noticed. I did chalk his name up once. We spread the ball around quite a bit. I'm trying to look. Let's see. Including Bo.
He had a good game?
Yes, he did. Including Bo, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 players carried the ball offensively as opposed to, like, running around or something, like the punter or something. And then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 players caught it. So, yeah, spreading it around a good bit. There were other players that could have been involved and were not. I wanted to get kind of your breakdown on the running game, though. A, would you have preferred more emphasis be put on it? And B, what did you think about the choices of who carried the ball, when, and how many times?
I thought Shivers was fine. I think in the whatever the carries that he got, I don't think you can give him a ton more than that. And I liked Bigsby. I thought what he was doing in there was good. There was a couple of plays when he made some stuff happen. I did not love how DJ Williams played. For the inside runner guy, I think he goes parallel to the line of scrimmage too much, and I think he's not breaking tackles. And then the one play that Auburn actually blocked perfectly is the play he tripped on the grass and fell down 5 yards. Ham and Council blocked to the inside, and the big freshman tight end was blocking on the outside, and he had a clear lane, I think, to get close to the goal line mm-hmm. if he doesn't fall down. And so that was unfortunate. And we scored anyhow. That was the series where I think where Seth caught the one and abused that guy you're talking about. But
yeah,
I didn't love what DJ Williams did. The run blocking was okay. It wasn't great. But at the same time, I wasn't hung up that we needed to keep kind of beating our head against it. Because I felt like, what we were doing in the passing game was working. We were making big explosive plays. We were moving down the field. So why beat our head against the wall for 3 yards of carry or whatever? So, when you took out the whatever the fumbled snap, it was like 4 yards carry for Auburn. So that's fine. I mean, it gets a good, solid experience SEC defense. It's not great, but it's fine. I think they can build on it. I think the running game will be, better a month from now. I think it'll be really much more effective. I did kind of appreciate what Bigsby did, and I think he and Shivers going forward can do some stuff. This is the other thing. Like, we didn't throw the ball to them much, you know, if at all. Did a running back catch the ball?
Right.
And we didn't throw the ball to the tight end except on the, you know, the 2-point conversion. But I'm going to tell you that both of those things were there.
We're saving them?
Yes. Okay. I mean, that there are multiple plays where the, you know, we had two tight ends on one side of the formation, and you know, everybody's thinking blocking, 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 and you know, there were some plays where they were there, but also I really liked what they did with the using the tight ends out blocking both for the running game and the passing game.
Absolutely. You and I have talked many, many times over the last year or so that one solid game, questionably solid game against LSU does not a great SEC back make. Mm-hmm. We know that DJ Williams has potential, but he's yet to impress me, bless his heart. I mean, I'm for him till the cows come home, but he always seems a step slow and reluctant to pilot, you know, power it into the line, and a little tentative, and he never seems to make he seems to get tackled very easily for somebody that's supposed to be a more stout guy. And honestly, I wasn't overly impressed with Tank Bigsby either. Now, he may again, it's his first game as a true freshman, and a lot of that can maybe be the offensive line as well, because they were getting some penetration on him. I mean, he got stopped behind the line at least once, you know, solidly behind the line. Yep. But he looked really good on that kick return, and so did Shivers on his kick return. They both got over 30 yards on their kick returns.
And the play in the first half when Shivers ran the ball and broke a couple tackles around the right-hand side.
Yes.
And got about 12 or 15 yards. That play, I thought, really gave a spark to the offense, and he showed what he could do when you give him a chance. That play really excited me.
He is something else. Yeah, I mean, he plays every play like it's the last drive of the national championship game. That's it. Mm-hmm. He has that fire and that attitude every play. He has the attitude of the little guy that's gotten picked on playing sports his whole life, and he's like, I'm going to stick it down your throat and show you.
Yep.
And that's how he does, and he is so impressive. And I was frankly surprised he didn't get more carries. I mean, I know he got 6 total for 29 yards, had that long of 11 there, but I really thought they could have found other ways to get him the ball. Were they just kind of spreading it around, saving him? What?
Yeah, well, I think they wanted to see what DJ Williams and Bigsby could do in the second half. I think that was it.
Did you notice that we did not have a Mark Anthony Richards sighting?
I did.
Do we know anything about that?
No, other than I think, you know, we didn't have that many plays and that many carries.
That's true. That's a good point. Well, hold on. You make a very good point here that I haven't mentioned yet. Yes. We didn't have the ball that many times that game. Kentucky, we stopped them from – we did a lot of bending and not breaking. But, you know, there's a good part and a bad part to bend but don't break. The good part is you don't break. The bad part is you spend a whole lot of time bending, which means your offense is not out on the field hardly ever. I remember at one point going on halftime where the commentators were talking about how so-and-so hadn't seen the ball and so-and-so hadn't thrown this many, you know, whatever. And they're like, of course, Auburn's only had the ball 4 times. I'm like, dang, they've only had the ball 4 times. It's almost halftime.
Yeah, we had the ball 4 times in the first half, and one of them was that 3 and out. They gave them the ball right before halftime, but they had the long drive. So, I think this was the other thing. Like, Auburn did not want to go 3 and out and give them a situation like that where they could do the long drive again. So that was important.
Yeah. So, yeah, there may have been other things we might have seen in this game if it had gone – if we'd had the ball more. If for no other reason that Chad and Gus might have been like, man, I'm bored. Let's just go ahead and do some of the cool stuff. Let's just throw it out there. It'll be all right. George has already changed the channel. They ain't watching no more, you know. That would have been funny. But no, I did feel like we played. See, here's the thing, too. The offense seemed all new and fresh and exciting as much as a similar to what we already run offense could. But on the other hand, if you really look at this as like an opening game, it was very vanilla.
Yes.
I mean, it was like run the ball, throw a little short pass, do a little thing to Flash. Oh, look, throw the ball into traffic to Seth. He'll catch it. I mean, that was pretty – that's a very simplified way of looking at it. But that was what kind of came across to me was we were finding five or six types of things to do and then using our athleticism rather than clever play designs in a lot of cases.
You're right.
So what about the offensive line? I just want to make sure we hit the key things here for sure. Was it as good as you hoped, as bad as you feared, somewhere in between?
It was about what I expected. I mean, it was solid. It wasn't great. It wasn't terrible. The run blocking was okay. Pass blocking was okay. They switched guys out. I felt like in the second half they put Keandre Jones in at guard and moved Council over to the left side, and then they put Troxel in for Alec Jackson. So then it was like Troxel, Council, Brahms, Keandre Jones, and Brett Arias Ham. And that was kind of the line for most of the second half. And I feel like they played a little better. I mean, I think that was a group that, played better, got better push, and we were more effective on offense when they were in there. So we'll see, going forward. I think they got a lot of, things still to work out. But, I thought nobody was awesome. Alec Jackson did not look great to me. And Tayshaun Manning was okay. But, I thought Council was fine. And I thought Ham had a solid game. And there were a couple plays when, they struggled and they couldn't get a lot of push early in the game. But we got it going a little bit in the second half. So,
well, before we get to the second half, we got to talk about that sequence right before. So Kentucky's down on our goal line, and it's, I guess, still 8-7. Which, by the way, how weird is this? Our game was 8-7 at halftime, and two other games were 7-5 at halftime.
That's weird.
That is really weird, yeah, which we'll get to in a little bit. So did Kentucky score there? I mean, it was such a pileup. I know everybody thinks they did, and I'm not just trying to be a homer and say they didn't. I'm just saying I'm not sure. I didn't feel like rewinding it on the DVR 100 times. I'm like, we'll just see what happens.
So I did that tonight.
Okay. All right.
I felt guilty that I feel like in real time, I really felt like they scored. And after, on Saturday evening or whatever, yesterday, I felt like they scored. But I watched that play a lot, and I really, really think that guy's knee was down on about the 1.5 yard line.
Mm-hmm.
Zacoby McClain is tackling him, and his right knee, I feel like, touched the ground. It wasn't for long. It would just kind of was a down and then up thing, like a split second kind of thing. And then he pushed forward, and then they had the pile up at the goal line. I think the officials did a terrible job there. They needed to explain what they saw, that, like, we don't think he broke the plane. We think his knee was down. Like, why did they spot the ball where they did? Were they saying forward momentum? Were they saying his knee was down? They needed to say that. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
But the other piece was, in real time, they didn't rule it was a touchdown. And the camera angle is not on the goal line. It's not the pylon cam or whatever like they have in the NFL where you get some better views sometimes. So I think that was a little bit deceiving. But I thought he scored, in the initial thing. But now I think he was down. I mean, I think his knee touched the ground and none of that stuff at the goal line mattered. And so then I think the interception was good. And then we get to the targeting.
And let me go on the record here as saying that in no way, shape, form, or fashion, on a scale of 0 to 100, I'm at an absolute 0. Do I think that that was a, quote, makeup call, right? You've heard people saying, oh, the referees knew they blew it on that call.
I don't think so at all.
I don't buy that at all. I think the referees, if they called targeting on that play, it was because they felt like there was targeting on that play. Now, do we agree with them? I don't know. But I think that they thought that there was targeting, or they wouldn't have just made something up to get back at Auburn after they screwed up themselves, quote unquote. You know what I mean?
Yeah. We've seen makeup calls, I think, in other games. But I don't think that was the case here. I think where player safety is concerned, they're going to err on the side of super caution. Do I disagree with it? Yeah, I think he was in front of the player, and I think the player saw him and adjusted. Mm-hmm. And I think you're not a defenseless player when you get ready to make a tackle on somebody. I'm sure the rule probably disagrees with me, but in my mind, like, it's not like he was a receiver just catching the ball or a return man in a vulnerable spot or something.
Defenseless, like right.
Yeah, he was literally running like in a football position to make a tackle on McCreary. And so, I mean, it was a great hustle. Derek Hall's a freaking defensive end, and he beat them back down the field and got ahead of them and turned back and blocked two guys. And I get it. The player safety is important. We don't want anybody to get hurt, so that's why they called it. But they this is, and again, the other piece, they didn't call it on the field at all.
Mm-mm.
After he scored, they reviewed the play, you know, mainly looking at whether he was at bounds or not the whole time. Mm-hmm. And then they went back and go, let's throw a penalty flag there.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So that was made like in Birmingham or whatever.
Yeah, I'm going to say, could we go back and maybe review Frank Sanders' catch in the 94 Iron Bowl while we're at it? I'd like to review that first down, that fourth down spot, if I could, while we're retroactively throwing penalty flags on things that already happened. I'd like to go back and do that, if that's all right. Thanks.
I hear you.
So, yeah, so that was weird for sure. But no, I go ahead.
I just got to say, the other thing was, even with the targeting thing and taking the touchdown off the board, Auburn felt good going into halftime.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And we made a good defensive stand. I'm like, look, we didn't get the bonus touchdown the other way, but just getting the ball away from them and them not scoring there was huge enough.
That's right. And I think the interception honestly made their quarterback a little more leery as the, you know, from the game.
Yeah. Again, before we go to the second half, because we got one big thing to talk about in the second half, and that's the improvements and the adjustments. But there was the other, going for two early. Now, a couple of people on Twitter kind of playfully said to me, oh, Auburn just violated your inviolate rule against ever going for two if it's not, you know, to win the game or keep from losing at the end. And I'm like, see, I've been misconstrued there. Because I've always said, you know this, we've talked about this for 100 years, John. I've always said, you never go for two if you don't have to, except if it's early enough in the game that nobody's looking for it. That's the only time I find it acceptable, and that's for two reasons. One, nobody's looking for it, so it's less likely to be completely shut down. And two, it just makes things much more interesting and exciting. In other words, if it happens, if a team is down like 8 and they go for 2, 3 minutes into the third quarter, I'm like, well, that's just stupid because there's probably going to be more scoring and those ratios are going to change. You know, what sounds like a good idea now is going to feel pretty stupid later when instead of being down 3, you're down 4. You know what I mean? That's why I say it. I mean, it seems like every time a team goes for 2 and doesn't make it early, later on they end up being down by enough points that it messes them up rather than enough points that they could tie and go to overtime or actually win. So that's why I hate it. But if you do it that early in the game, you know, that, because that's the other thing. When you do it with 3 minutes to go in the third quarter and everybody knows it's coming and they're play defense for it, and it's much harder to get a two-point conversion when the defense knows it's coming.
Yeah.
If you do it on the first score of the game in the first quarter, they don't think you're going to do it if you're not Oregon, right? And you hadn't done it since 2013 if you're Auburn. And so you have a much higher chance of success when the other team doesn't dream you're going to do it. It's just like onside kicks usually work better like in the first half than they do in the fourth quarter. Because in the fourth quarter, everybody knows exactly what you're doing.
Right.
So I thought it was a good idea.
But it's also, it's the kind of thing where they didn't say go out there and 100% do it.
Right.
It's if the other team lines up wrong, you execute it. If they line up in the right way, you just bring everybody over, kick the extra point.
So what did they do and what would they have had to do for us to kick the extra point? Because I was never entirely clear on that.
So again, but we've done this before where we line up and it's like the center, the holder, and there's a, you know, a tight end or whatever on the right-hand side. And then everybody else, like all the offensive linemen are over on the left-hand side with somebody behind them, so then it looks almost like you could run a screen over there, right?
Yeah.
And so the idea is you count how many guys the defense puts in front of the, you know, the defenders where the ball is, behind where the holder and the tight end are.
In the middle.
Yeah, and depending on how many defenders are over there and how they're lined up, you make a decision about whether you're going to execute it or not. You're just counting. And you're seeing kind of which way are they lined up kind of inside the receiver or outside of them and that kind of stuff. And they looked at it and they said, based on the numbers and the way they're lined up, it's we got it. And then they did it. And it was Grant Loy, the backup quarterback, the transfer from Bowling Green.
How about that?
And so he's the guy who threw it. And then Shanker, you know, easily got open and caught it.
How about that our brand new, newly minted backup quarterback got to score? That's pretty cool. His first play, basically, right? That was his first time on the field.
It is. No pressure.
How many players can say I've played one play and I scored, you know? So that's pretty true. Cool. He's in the Auburn record books for all time now, ahead of a whole lot of people that never saw an end zone. So that's pretty amazing. Okay, so this other thing we want to talk about real quick about this game is second half adjustments, right? Kevin Steele figured out what Eddie Graham was doing, and we fixed it.
Yeah, just mainly with the linebackers, simplifying things, not over shifting and over watching in terms of what the offense is doing and stuff, and just going back to more basic stuff that kept them in better position when Kentucky tried to move guys left or right. They were doing a lot of stuff with, you know, putting four wide receivers on one side of formation and then try to go the other way and that kind of stuff. And so in the second half, Auburn played all that a lot better. You know, in the first half, like, Kentucky had 4 yards a carry, and in the second half it was like 2 yards a carry. And, you know, they went three and out the first couple of drives of the second half. You know, Auburn created the turnovers in the second half, the big, you know, the Sherwood fumble and the other fumble late. And the defense really settled down. It took control. And again, this was without starting defensive end, who was, you know, kicked out for targeting, Derek Hall. And then the other starting defensive end, who's, you know, your all SEC guy, Big Cat Bryant, was hobbled with an ankle injury. He played in the second half, but not a ton and not close to 100%. And so really you're playing like one of the better offensive lines in the country without either starting defensive end being there, being fully effective, and we shut them down. And the defensive line, the defense as a whole adjusted. I thought the young secondary had a great game. You know, Simpson made a bunch of plays. Your man Tut made a bunch of plays.
King!
And
now when he was a young man.
That's all I'll do.
He did. And Sherwood, I think, is going to be a freaking star. So
yeah,
you know, and again, McCreary is a star already. Like, people don't know it, but he is a monster. They threw the ball at him 3 times in this game, completed one pass for like 1 yard or 2 yards or whatever. And that's it.
Honestly, I thought all the DBs looked really good in this game.
So
I was very excited about that.
I think that, and a lot of young defensive linemen played in this game because, again, a couple of guys were out and ejected or out or whatever, that kind of stuff. So a lot of freshmen, redshirt freshmen, played on the defensive line. The new Kirk got better as the game went along. Truesdale was really good in this game. He had some, you know, really held the point of attack a lot. And so it was good to see. And I think, the defense is only going to get better. But the biggest thing is just, you can have the best game plan in the world, but Kevin Steele has been coaching forever. He's seen it all. He knows how to adjust, and the players trust him absolutely to get them in the position. If he says do this, they're going to do it, and we'll be fine.
Oh, no, John. Now you've just done it. We're going to have a new sound effect for Kevin Steele. Kevin Steele. He knows a thing or two because he's seen a thing or two. Oh, boy.
Kevin Steele was on the freaking 90s Nebraska staff. So.
There you go. I wanted to mention a couple of things real quick. One, time of possession, Kentucky 36-29, Auburn 23-31. Man, that's a very weighty advantage. But I have to say, Bo Nix, leading rusher and punter. What in the world? Bo Nix goes out there and actually punts a couple of times, more than once.
But I mean, he's good at it, and B, it's actually really smart because if you put a guy back for the punt return, you're basically playing defense with 10 people against Auburn lined up in an offensive formation with their quarterback.
It's true.
So But then it's a thing of like, if Auburn was to go for it, they're playing 11 against 10. So then if you don't put a guy back, it's easy for them to do the pooch kick and get the, you know, the good field position thing. And Auburn had a huge field position advantage in this game, and I think this was part of it. So I think we're going to continue to see the Bo Nix punting thing, and I think at some point this year they're gonna run a play out of it when a team is not ready.
Well, you remember Cam to Darvin Adams?
Yes.
That
yes.
punt formation in the Iron Bowl.
The quick kick formation. Yep, you're right.
Yeah, went to the quick kick, and then he just threw the pass. Alabama wasn't really looking for it. Okay, so you want to talk about Georgia a little bit, if we must?
Let's do.
So Georgia, they didn't look all that great until late. You know, kind of like our game, they struggled for a while, pulled away late. But honestly, in their game, they looked a lot worse than we did until they kind of pulled away. Don't you think?
Yes, and Kentucky is infinitely better than Arkansas.
That's the other part.
Kentucky's a top 25 team. Arkansas was terrible last year.
This Kentucky team could have been in the game with Georgia.
Again, Georgia's lucky they didn't play this Kentucky team. They'd have lost the way they played.
There you go. There it is.
Georgia won this game because their defense is great, and their defense absolutely dominated Kentucky. Their offense was a train wreck.
Yeah, Arkansas, yeah.
And Georgia went into this offseason with the plan of, we got this, the transfer from Wake Forest.
Yep.
You know, Jamie Newman, he's going to be the quarterback. They practiced him. He's the one that was working with the first team the whole offseason. Then he opts out. The transfer from Southern Cal, JT Daniels, is not medically cleared. So, then the redshirt freshman, Deshaun Mathis, plays. He was really bad in the first quarter of this game.
I was trying to think of the third-string quarterback's name because the Audible guys were talking about how it was such a great Georgia quarterback name. And I was trying to – don't say it, because I was like, now what is the perfect Georgia quarterback name? And I came up with Stetson MacArthur III.
Stetson Bennett.
There you go. Okay. I don't know where I got MacArthur from, but it works. Okay. Yeah.
So, Stetson Bennett is a guy who was on Georgia's roster a couple years ago, left, went to junior college, came back as a walk-on, and was like the fifth-string guy. And so the only reason they put him in was because, the guy they were playing was, really floundering. The offense was terrible. And they needed somebody steady who could make a couple of passes, and Bennett could do that, and so they played him. But this is the other part, is it was Arkansas. Georgia could not line up and run the ball at Arkansas, regardless of who played quarterback. I mean, in the first part of the game, they had like third and two and fourth and one in the red zone, and got stuffed by Arkansas.
Yeah.
I
don't want to take too much from it, because sometimes you turn around and then the next week they figure it all out, or it's just a matter of matchups or something. So I don't want to be like, Georgia will not be able to run the ball on Auburn, because watch them come out and get 300 yards. You know what I mean? But
no, I get it. But some of it was about execution and confidence and the offensive line and the running backs and stuff, and that they're clearly not there. So,
Was there any of it Arkansas better than we thought, or was it all just Georgia being blah?
A little bit. Maybe Arkansas has kind of gotten off the mat, and they, I think they had a good game plan on both sides of the ball. They played real hard and that kind of stuff. But honestly, I think some of it was really a lot of it was Georgia kind of floundering around an offense. I think that was it.
You had a note that JT Daniels was medically cleared. I didn't watch that game. I watched the highlight clip because it was on the same time as something else I was watching. So was he injured?
No, he's been injured since he left Southern Cal.
Oh, that's right. He's the Cal guy. Okay, Southern Cal guy.
Yeah. He's the Southern Cal guy. He started a year there and then transferred when Keaton Slovis got the starting job. And he was okay as the Southern Cal starter. He wasn't awesome. And so he transferred and now he hasn't had a lot of practice time with the first team, and he's coming off an injury. But their options at quarterback this weekend are, again, Stetson Bennett, a guy that's basically a walk-on, or the guy that was ineffective in the first quarter, or JT Daniels, coming off the century. So,
I've said all along, if I have to play Georgia, earlier is better than later, because either they haven't figured things out yet, or their players that are suspended aren't back yet, or their players that are injured aren't back yet. So I like that. And if I have to play Georgia in Athens, let it be in a year when they're not going to have more than 20,000 people in the stadium.
That's right.
So that we're getting at least to some degree those things, right?
No, I agree. And by November, their offense could be worked out and they could be rolling over people, but that's not where they are today.
No.
So I think that is a big advantage to catch them early while they're still figuring it out.
Unfortunately, this year, I don't think they've had a bunch of guys get in a big fight at a truck stop or anything like they usually do, right? Or start selling their jerseys.
It's early on Monday evening, so
let's don't rush them. They have important rules yet to break. All right, so let's
big jet ski chase before it's over.
So, I'm happy about the timing. It is weird to think, you know, we go from no football, no football, no football, Kentucky, freaking Georgia. What?
Yeah. It's. You know, the ramp up from like you were saying, like 3 weeks ago, Arkansas State, this past week, Auburn, Kentucky, next week, Auburn, Georgia, this upward slope is pushing infinity. So
quite the curve. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, you had a note, low scoring defensive game. Is that your kind of read on it right now?
Well, Georgia, I think, has the best defense in the country, probably.
Yeah,
I'm just telling you right now. And I think Auburn's defense is not far behind that. Yeah. And I think, you know, both defenses are going to play really well. And again, what did we see at the game you and I went to, you know, less than a year ago?
Yeah.
You know, pretty good defensive battle. The difference was Georgia had a senior quarterback who had been through it all.
Mm-hmm.
And an experienced offensive line, an NFL running back, and they made a few more plays on offense.
That was it.
They don't have any of those guys. Yeah. So, you know, I think their plan is going to be, you know, don't make mistakes, win it with the defense, you know, try to win like a 13-10 kind of game or something, probably, really. And I think Auburn has to go in there with confidence with Bo Nix and say, our defense can stop Georgia and we got to attack with Bo and the receivers, and just don't turn it over.
That's what I want to see, is this attack, right? I feel like if I'm Kirby Smart, what I'm thinking is exactly what you just said, and go after Bo Nix. I feel like Georgia's going to look at the film and say, Auburn doesn't impress me on the ground. Their running game, their offensive line isn't really there. And so if I can put pressure on Bo Nix and make him make mistakes, then I can turn the ball over and win this game by a couple of scores. And so I feel like we need to say the heck with that and just go out there and attack them, but be crisp about it. You know, I don't want Bo back there surveying the field. He needs to have outlets. He needs to have places he can put the ball in a hurry and go, go, go. In between plays, they can take all the time they want. I'm not in a big hurry-up mood this week. But, I mean, during the play, I want that ball out of his hands quickly.
Right. Yeah, we can't leave him back there for extended periods. And you're right. Like, there were plays last week where we had the tight ends in blocking, or we used the tight ends like on a crossing route as a decoy for Seth Williams or some of these other things. And I think this is the week that we can take advantage of those things. And the little dump off to the tight end, the running back, is going to be there. And that'll be the safety valve, I think, for him this week that will, you know, that will maybe take the place of some of the running game if they're all over it. I like what you're saying there.
Yeah. What about our defense? What do you think we can do against their offense? It looked like Arkansas was able to control them for a while, but that was with a different quarterback and everything. What's their main weapon? Again, I didn't watch as much of this game because it was on at the same time.
It's easy. It's George Pickens.
Oh, yes.
So Pickens is their version of Seth Williams. He's their number one guy. They want to get him the ball and make stuff happen. They have two, you know, highly recruited running backs, but they didn't do a ton against Arkansas. Zamir White is the main one, and I think
Master of the Pan Flute. I like his pan flute work. I really do. I'm not sure how good of a running back he is, but he can play the pan flute.
I liked his second album, so. So we'll see. I really think our defense is very good, and I think we can contain their offense, keep them under 20, and that's going to give us a chance. So I think the, you know, if we, again, it, Auburn should look at it like, don't let Pickens beat us. Everybody else, we feel like we could just stop them. I don't think they can line up and just run the ball at us. Their offensive line didn't play any, you know, isn't as experienced or effective as Kentucky's, and they certainly didn't play half as well as Kentucky's did on Saturday. So,
who's Georgia's running back?
Pickens. Oh, Zamir White.
Man, I don't know how we're going to cover that. You can't stop it. You can only hope to contain it. Man, that we can only hope to contain that, John. That's impressive. He carries the ball. He plays the pan flute. I don't know. That's tough. That's a 1-2 punch right there. He brings it. He brings the game.
Yeah, he makes you play his tune. So.
Yes, he does. Play a tune. Play the tune.
Dancing by the Nile.
I think Tut's going to have a game.
I think regardless of who plays quarterback for Georgia, we need to go in and just say, it's Pickens and it's stopping the run.
Yeah, that's it.
Stop the run. If we stop the run and make them one-dimensional, there's no quarterback on their roster that I'm like, okay, let that guy throw it 40 times against us and we'll see what happens. I'll feel pretty good about our chances.
I feel pretty good. I'm feeling increasingly good the more we talk about this, which is kind of what we do this for. I'm glad other people enjoy it too, but it's really to make me feel better about our chances on the next Saturday.
Well, I mean, again, I told you it's the best defense in the country. So this is other, like, they're going to, I fully expect them to shut down our running game. I think we're going to have a hard time. We're going to have series where we go 3-and-out. We're going to have series where we have to kick field goals.
Yep.
I think Bo Nix is in a different place right now. He's confident. I think the offense gives him options, and I think he's going to go in there and make some stuff happen. So the other thing is both teams are great special teams, you know, punting, kick coverage, that panic stuff. But with two defenses playing well, and I think it could be a game where field position matters some too.
I think the one takeaway I want our listeners to get from this is don't be surprised. I mean, you just said it. Don't be surprised if we go 3-and-out a few times. This is Georgia's defense has done that to us several, you know, last few years at times, except when we had Kerryon Johnson healthy. And I really don't know that our running backs currently are going to be able to go out and, like, dominate against this Georgia defense. They couldn't really do very well against Kentucky's, although Kentucky's pretty good too. I don't think we're going to move the ball a lot on the ground, and I would be surprised if our running game looks much different than it looked day before yesterday, a couple of days ago. I do think that the key to victory on offense is Bo Nix and the plays that he is in on with the passing game. They're going to have to find ways. I mean, again, you mentioned the game we were at last year. Remember what finally worked in the fourth quarter was Bo Nix throwing the ball in those bubble screens. That was the only thing we had that entire game that worked.
Yep.
Was Bo throwing those bubble screens in the fourth quarter, and it led to two touchdowns and almost a third to tie the game. And so I feel like Morris will find things that work quicker than that.
I agree.
Okay. All right. Any other thing about the Georgia game before we move ahead?
I hate them, and I want to be there.
Well, tell me this. Did you see the talk a little bit? I mean, it comes up all the time about would you rather beat Georgia or Alabama. I feel like you and I have made it clear over the years that we're in the Alabama camp, right?
Yes, but I'm from Atlanta. You lived there a long time. I'm tired of losing to Georgia.
I agree. We must beat them, and we must beat them bad. But we're not, but we're going to beat them. We're going to find a way to beat them. I don't know how bad it's going to be, but they've got it.
Anything.
They've got it coming. They really got it coming. All right, we're going to pause here for a second because remember, we don't do commercials. You will not hear us talking about any gambling sites or Vegas connections or pharmaceutical drugs or golf courses or anything like that. All we do to pay our bills is have our patrons who appreciate our show and appreciate the things that we try to do for you guys and are good enough to give a little bit back to help us be able to keep doing it. And to do that, go to www.auwishbone.com and click on the big orange link button that says Become a Patron. And for as little as a dollar a month, you too can be part of the family and part of the fun. John is currently sending out our power poll every week. We got a couple new patrons this week. Maybe because I mentioned it last week that it's really easy and fun. You don't have to type it. This is the best part, John. You send out the power poll. People don't have to type anything. They get your email. They click on the link. It takes you right into this thing where you just move the teams around in boxes. You know, just move them around a little bit until you're happy with it, and then you click good. I'm good to go. That's it. Save, you know, send, and it goes in, and John gets the results, and he talks about them on the show. So if you want to be among the elite who run our power poll and are voters in the most important and most accurate polling going on today, according to me and nobody else, then www.auwishbone.com. Here are the folks currently getting it done for us. There is, of course, the great Samuel Salvatore and Christopher Burleson, along with Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, Brian Gray, Chris Usher, Gary Grant, Logan Chilton, Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens. Always enjoy seeing Richard's tweets where he's getting into the box up there in the stadium every Saturday. Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Tom Anderson, Willie Carden, Ann Kangian. Hey, you falling up? Man, John, I'm telling you, using this arm here and having my microphone up in the air is making me, I can breathe better. This is awesome. I can do this without gasping for breath. Ben Bloodworth, Clay Henson, Connor Davis, Dan Thompson, Daniel Odom, David Evers, David Hegler, Emmanuel Seaman, George Gaston, Jacob and Robin Fleming, James Greenwell, Joel Beckham, John McCune, John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B, Phil Davis, Preston Settle, Reynolds Wolf, Rich Reimer, Steve Harlan, Timothy, WDE Richie, Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Boddy, Alex Nguyen, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, Cato the Barner, Chris Hilton, plus Page 2, Chris Thrash, Danny Flack, Darius Benton, David Simpson, Di Bama, Earl Ricks, Eric Mahan, Hugh Anderson, Josh Teal, Kevin Kinoy, Kevin Mahan, Lane Middleton, Mike Finley, Papa Todd, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Ross, Russell Milling, Shannon Butson, Sarah Hines, Shane Bailey, Snowdog, Stephen Houston, Tim Pittman, Todd Gray, Tony Perry, Auburn Elvis, thank you very much, Ben Amos, Brandon Sisson, Brandon Smith, Chris Commode, Aaron Pyle, David Smiley, Donnie Reynolds, Ivor Evans, I'm nearly done, James Taylor, Jason Albrick, man, are we glad to have you guys, John Stubbs, John Zavachin, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, Justin Bean, Lawrence Kane, Mark Squire, Matthew Flowers, Mick Vigicana, Nicholas Craig, Patrick Williams, Paul Bankson, Robert Drain, Robert O. Sammons, Royce Alvarez, we're in the home stretch, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, that's the truth, Ruth, Spanky, Stephen Thompson, Trevor Johnson, Kenneth Brent Rains, Brant Rumble, Chris, plus our one-time and anonymous donors, we thank you all. Go to www.auwishbone.com. And now I think we have the power poll results.
We do. Here we go.
Let's do it.
After the post week one SEC Wishbone Patrons power poll, the bottom three teams in order, has been a little shakeup here, Missouri, then Vanderbilt, then Arkansas.
Oh, look at that. Oh, sorry. I was going to play that, but it was jammed up, so it didn't work. Go ahead.
All right, then kind of South Carolina by themselves.
Oh, man.
Then a tier of kind of a big tier in the middle. Ole Miss, then Kentucky, A&M, Tennessee, and LSU all together.
Wow.
Kentucky, A&M, Tennessee, and LSU all exactly the same, kind of in this middle group. Right above them, tied, Georgia and Mississippi State.
Woo!
Above them, wow. Tied, Auburn and Florida.
I timed that out pretty good.
Alabama at the top, out Florida and Auburn tied for second.
So we got Alabama going back into the direction. Yeah. Got Alabama, and then Auburn and Florida, and then Georgia, Mississippi State.
Yep.
And then LSU and Kentucky.
And then LSU The big group of LSU, Tennessee, A&M, and Kentucky.
Wow. I don't know if I'd have A&M in that group.
It's not unreasonable, but...
Okay. Yeah. All right. All right. Interesting. All right. Well, before we get to listener questions, this is the part of the show that many people anxiously anticipate the most.
This is the part I tune in for.
That's absolutely right. As you have said before, we are not so much an Auburn podcast as we are...
We're a delivery vehicle.
For...
For Jared and the Eagle, man.
Hello, Van, John, and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrecht, the yard sale artist, back again for a new season of Auburn Superhero Battles.
Woohoo!
This time around, I was struggling trying to figure out who I wanted to represent the Kentucky Wildcats, but sometimes the answer is just blatantly staring you in the face. I'm going to assign the Kentucky Wildcats the DC superhero known as Wildcat. Now, for those of you who may not be in the know, Wildcat has
sense.
A lot of experience. He is a veteran. He is scrappy, but he doesn't have a ton of superpowers. And I think that's a pretty good analogy for Kentucky. They have a lot of veterans returning to their team. They are scrappy. They are no quit. And I do believe they're going to upset somebody or other, maybe a couple of folks, this season. Now, Auburn came in, you know, it's hard to gauge on the first game, but I'd say we looked good, strong, middle tier, able to make some adjustments in the second half, especially as we learned some things. So I'm going to start us off at Spider-Man. I think Spider-Man feels good. I think we look pretty strong. We look pretty agile. We're not the most unstoppable hero you've ever seen, but we've got a lot going for us. So I bring this down to Spider-Man versus Wildcat, and Spider-Man being enhanced and superpowered will overcome the veteran scrappiness of the Kentucky Wildcats as Wildcat. Having said that, I know you're all really here just to check in on Pat and the Eagle, and since the Eagle can't actually go into the stadium this season,
Oh, man.
We do what we never do. We actually listened to one of Van's ideas and decided perhaps, maybe, just perhaps,
we never do.
We could make a bionic eagle. I saw Pat with his lab coat on earlier, so let's go down to the lab and see what he's done.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. Better. Stronger. Faster.
I was afraid of this. Is what I was afraid of, John. Oh no.
Drop your evil snacks, or there will be trouble.
And it looks like Pat's made a killer robotic eagle that cannot be controlled.
Oh,
awesome. Catch you guys next time. War Eagle Van, John, and the rest of the AU Wishbone family.
Yeah, I was afraid there would be a bionic eagle going rogue, and I'm afraid it's looking like that's the direction this is taking. I have a lot of respect for Jared's writer's room coming up with the plots for these things. They really do a lot of work there. So let's see. Are we ready for the listeners to sound
ready.
Off? All right. I guess I have to push this button.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, 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 on the AU Wishbone podcast.
Okay, what do we got? I imagine we have a couple of questions this week.
We do. We got questions, and we got some good ones. I'm just going to keep them throwing at you. We got to go. You ready?
We'll rock and roll. Question. Rock and roll.
First question from the yard sale artist himself,
oh.
Jared Albrecht.
Woo, this is a banner night.
Accused me of not reading his questions. he says, his question is, I got a real good vibe watching that Shivers energy early in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Any idea why it wasn't really seen again? I know Seth has become a monster, but I thought it weird that Shivers vanished. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I said the same thing a minute ago without even knowing his question. So absolutely, I agree. I think it was a combination of Cadillac wants to spread the love around a little bit. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I think that, as you pointed out last week, he is the guy that put five running backs with Orr between them all for the first game last year. So, yeah, I think it was probably a combination of trying to get everybody a little playing time and maybe not wearing any of them out too much before Georgia. That's my feeling on it. But I agree, though, that he was the most impressive of the bunch, which I didn't think I'd be saying. Do you think we're going to see Mark Anthony next week?
I don't think we'll see him next week. I think we'll the week after we play Arkansas at home, I think we'll see him then. So,
okay.
A follow-up question from Preston Settle, who emailed us at auwishbone@gmail.com, who says, John Van War Eagle, so happy the SEC football is back. He says, besides the starting running back Shivers, what running back impressed you the most in Auburn's backfield, and would you provide a post-game auwishbone running back depth chart, War Eagle, Preston Settle?
Wow, that's really good. Other than Shivers, who impressed me the most? Bo Nix. It's true.
Okay, but you know, Tom Anderson asked the same question. What did you think of the run game and the collective performance of the running backs? Like, who would you pick out of there? How would you do the depth chart if you had to do it?
You know that Bo did have both the longest run and the most yards.
Well, and I'm going to tell you this, like, there were plays in the game when he could have kept it and gotten big yards and did not.
Yeah, and there was also a play where he could have slid and he instead lowered his head and took the defensive back out, which I'm like, that's awesome, except, oh my gosh.
Yeah, save it.
Say, yeah, you do that against Georgia or Alabama. You don't do that against Kentucky in the first game of the season, man. Even Cam dislocated a shoulder at Blinn doing a dive into the end zone without even being touched by anybody. So, yeah, you got to be careful. So what was the other part? Oh, the depth chart?
Again, if you had to pick the playing time for the next few weeks for running backs, how would you do the depth chart?
Number one, Shivers. Number two, well, we didn't see Harold Joyner and we didn't see Mark Anthony. So that just leaves us.
Going to see Harold Joyner.
So that just leaves us Tank and DJ. I guess I'd go Tank second, DJ third right now.
But I mean, would you? I mean, unseen, sight unseen, would you put Mark Anthony ahead of DJ?
Not sight unseen, no.
I might.
Okay. Fair enough.
But again, I felt like Bigsby did a couple of things. Like he had some good body lean, falling forward and stuff. So I'm interested just to give him some more.
I guess I expected him to be like Ironhead Hayward out there, and he was just sort of a smaller guy.
But I think he was effective. I think he's not afraid of contact. And I think, again, it was his first game. I think, you know, I think he's going to be solid.
I think I was expecting like an Abrams, and I got a Sherman. And I don't mean that as an insult. It's just a smaller, less physically imposing Tank than the Tank I was expecting. So he's going to be Sherman for now, and maybe he can work his way up to the old Abrams or at least a Patton or something like that, you know. Maybe a Bradley fighting vehicle.
All right, next question is from Blake Yeager, who says, do you think the targeting call before the half actually helped the team mentally? I spent halftime fuming and staring into space. I think it made the team angry as well.
If it did, I don't know because I wasn't there. But if it did, then I agree that that's a good thing because mental edge, man. Anything that gives you a mental edge over where you were before, absolutely.
Again, like we said, I think the biggest thing was holding them from scoring gave Auburn positive momentum going to locker room, regardless of the outcome of that play.
Didn't one of our guys fall down after celebrating?
Oh, yes, we did have a celebrating problem early in the game.
And we got to get better at celebrating.
That's right. That's right, guys.
There was some definitive get better. Actually, several people tweeted me early in the game and said, we got to get better at celebrating.
And we got to get better at celebrating.
That's right. That never gets old.
And Seth ran over a photographer, too, after his play where he dominated that guy. So.
He hurt multiple people on that play.
He did. Our next question is from Chris Thrash, who says, did I hear correct that on the broadcast that Nix trails only Trevor Lawrence at interceptions per pass attempt? That is awesome. Actually, it's the longest streak of pass attempts without an interception in college football. It's Trevor Lawrence and then Bo Nix.
Really?
It is. Wow. So again, it's been a while since he threw the interception.
It feels like he threw 17 at Florida.
I know, but that was like, again.
Yeah. It was like game five or something.
Earlier last year. So,
yeah.
And he also says, I wish I had a time machine. I could go back to the 2013 national championship and tell Florida State fans what to look forward to.
I know. I was thinking the same thing. I was like, man, I wish I could go back and say, look, you may have won this game, but you're not going to enjoy the next few years. I mean, we had 2012 after 2010. They're having 2012 every year, and I just feel so bad for them. I feel so bad.
Dispel once and for all with this fiction.
Yeah, I don't feel bad for them. I don't feel at all.
Next question is from Clay Henson on Twitter. He says, 11 a.m. time slot of?
Victory. Smells like victory.
It's more like brunch.
Sometimes brunch smells like victory, John. You have to take your victories where you can get them.
Our next question from Auburn Elvis.
Ah, it's not working.
Well, assume Auburn Elvis intro music. He says, Auburn's in-stadium seating organization is going to become the new model for the rest of college football, isn't it? Yes, it should be.
It was great.
It was well-designed. They kept the students apart. Had assigned seating for the students spread throughout the stadium in the chair backs, and that was good. It was well done.
And it seemed loud, too, because they were spread around.
Yeah, but I mean, the students brought the energy. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
It was weird. You could hear the mic man a couple times during the game.
It was weird. Yeah, you're right.
Second question is, did you notice how many times Auburn went with the Wildcat in the red zone against Kentucky? Is this a sign that has more confidence in his base offense in previous years? Because what he's saying is zero Wildcat.
Yeah. When I thought we might be going to the Wildcat, instead we backed up and threw a pass to Seth.
Yeah. So we didn't have that many attempts inside the 10. I think it's probably still in there somewhere. But no, I mean, the other part is like we have a good quarterback and good receivers. Why put ourselves at a disadvantage?
Yeah, don't gimmick it if you don't have to. And again, we didn't have the ball that many times, honestly.
Yeah, that's right.
It wasn't exactly, you know, Texas and Texas Tech out there. You'd have seen everything three times if it had been like that.
That's it. Johnny Dent emails and asks, assuming they continue to play at this level, is this Auburn's best receiving core ever?
No, but it's good and getting better.
Yeah. No, I mean, I would say this, like Seth Williams is rapidly zooming up the charts, and they got a long way to go, but this core as a whole is really good. It's a very good group.
Yeah, no, I don't. I agree.
Ben Bloodworth asks, would you rather have had Georgia lose to Arkansas or are you more content with the current situation?
More content with the current situation. In fact, I'd have rather them beat Arkansas 90-0, honestly, and come in just like thinking they are the you-know-what.
No, I'm kind of happy with the current situation because, honestly, I don't think their offense has a lot of confidence.
There you go. That's true.
And I think if we come out in this game and our defense holds them and they go 3-and-out a couple times, the angst level on the offensive sideline for Georgia is going to go about 10.
That's right.
Scott Crankton emailed us, that I was unable to view the game, so I listened as much as I could on the radio. Stan White struck me as being unusually neutral in his call of the game instead of his blatantly over-the-top Auburn biases.
Really?
Does he feel well? Regards, Scott Crankton.
Wow, yeah, I didn't hear, so I don't know, but that's interesting. Stan was out there going,
oh, for a muse of fire.
I don't know these things.
I did two more, one from Ken Ringer, who last week predicted a big passing game for Bo Nix.
Yeah.
Good call. And he said, in terms of the Georgia game, he says, in order for Auburn to win, they must be able to run the football. Shivers is not the man. Bigsby may be able to help with the running game. And Bo must continue to have a good game throwing the ball. So.
Yep, I agree.
And then the last one is from Jeff Florence, who emailed us and said, actually, it's Spanky.
Spanky!
I love the podcast and the videos. I can literally hear John's eyes rolling back every time the soundboard is activated. Keep up the good work.
And I say you!
He says, I was driving through Sylacauga, Alabama.
Hey! Yeah! I'm sorry, I messed you up. Do it again.
I was driving through Sylacauga, Alabama, and thought of this question. What are the chances that Georgia's five-star transfer quarterback is remarkably medically cleared in time to play Auburn? Was last week's game between Arkansas and Georgia just a ploy? I don't have facts to back this up.
Well, I'm glad that you were driving through Sylacauga because it needs all the people driving through. I hope you dropped a couple of bucks at a local business because it needs all the help it can get. Bless their hearts. I haven't been back to Sylacauga in a while, man. But that's cool. No, that's true. Didn't you just say their quarterback's back?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Again, it was like, ooh.
I'm shocked. I'm shocked to discover there's gambling going on.
This establishment. So he signs off in his email by saying, stay true and keep pressing those soundboard buttons and rolling those eyes. And he says, Spanky, long-lost childhood friend of Reynolds Wolf.
Oh, wow. Reynolds. There you go. Interesting. Good old...
like an unwanted neighbor that comes over and visits.
From the Weather Channel, Reynolds Wolf.
Thundersnow.
All right. Good old Thundersnow. I love it. Glad to hear somebody knows Reynolds. Okay. So that was the last
great,
one.
Great emails this week. Great.
Those were great. Those were absolutely great. I'm going to hear from Jared like, you read my question. I'm going to get a text. I'm going to get a text Tuesday about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. No later than that. There we go. And by the way, I thought his eagle thing was really on point tonight. Are we ready to take a trip?
Let's do it.
Okay. This one's always a slow burn. There we go.
Trip around the FTC.
And I say you.
All right. So we had some interesting results. I mean, I thought the Florida Ole Miss game, I didn't think Ole Miss was going to win, but I thought it was going to be entertaining, and it was.
It was an absolute shootout. I think everybody looks at what Florida did. People kind of missed the boat. Ole Miss had 620 yards of offense and 35 points in that game. Yeah. The only difference was they got in the red zone a few times and didn't score. So
that's it.
And Florida's defense is not terrible. So I think Ole Miss's offense has definitely improved. But Florida, you know, Ole Miss's defense is bad, and Florida made them look bad.
I'm kind of scared of Mississippi State now. Should I be?
Well, more scared than we were before the season, sure. I think the transfer quarterback's good, and the offensive scheme is different. It's so it's not something we're used to preparing for. I think the other piece is, you know, Ole Miss's best defensive, again, Ole Miss, LSU didn't have a lot of starters back.
No.
To say the least.
Three.
Again, they had three starters back, and then, you know, Stingley was hospitalized. It was like some kind of, you know, allergic reaction or something. Friday
I think
night.
He, I think he had an allergic reaction to seeing that there were three starters back.
Well,
I'm feeling sick. Call the ambulance.
I was going to say, yeah, an allergic reaction to defensive game plan, but yeah, they played man to man the whole game.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think Washington beat Mike Leach every year playing zone all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think now the other thing that's really fun about this is again, Mississippi State's going to play Alabama. Mississippi State has an off week before Alabama. And also later this year, Mississippi State plays Georgia.
Oh.
So we're going to get to see both those defenses against Mississippi State, too. So there's going to be some fun down the road.
Oh, man.
Sure, we should be more worried about him. But I have faith in Kevin Steele that he'll figure it out between now and then. And
I told you when he came into the conference, when the Pirate came into the conference, I said, this is going to be fun. I don't know if they're going to win, but it's going to be entertaining. And so far, we're 1-0 on entertainment and winning.
It was definitely entertaining. And again, you and I both nailed it in the preseason. We were skeptical about LSU being an upper-tier team. We felt they were in the middle of the pack team.
Absolutely. 100%. We were both like, seriously? Where are these people getting this? Where are people getting them being like a top-five team from? I just didn't see it. Reputation, last year's achievement. Well, that's great, but I mean, you know.
We've had that merit badge before. We know how much it's worth. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we talked about Georgia trying to muddle past Arkansas, and then in a very similar game, it's kind of the opposite. Alabama-Missouri. Alabama got big up on Missouri early and then kind of like put it in neutral, right?
Yeah, Alabama got up huge and then just coasted the rest of the way. Missouri scored a little bit, but Alabama was already like, you know, halfway mentally on the bus. So
yeah, I watched part of the South Carolina-Tennessee game, but something happened and I had to miss the end. So I missed that it actually came down to a good ending. But you call it the rock fight. But the one game I knew nothing about, I just assumed. Was it for whatever reason, I didn't see A&M beating Vanderbilt. I watched the show with Chizik and the stupid Florida receiver I hate. And they never talked about this game. I never heard a word about it. I watched that show like three times and never got anything. You know, it's on like when you go to bed and it's on when you turn the TV on the next morning. And I never got a word about Vanderbilt A&M. So I had to go back and watch the YouTube highlights. And man, Vanderbilt, what the heck, man?
Again, Vanderbilt has a freshman quarterback, and he was a little frisky, but A&M had five fumbles.
Yeah.
And that really kept Vanderbilt in the game. And, you know, Kellen Mond was blah, and they kind of putzed around, and, you know, that gave Vanderbilt chances. But again, Vanderbilt was, you know, had chances at the end of the game. It was just stupid.
How many games had safeties this week? A bunch, right? I mean, there were multiple.
Our game should have had a safety.
Yeah.
That was a freaking safety.
And yeah, I mean, there were two games where they had 5 points. You can go. If there's one thing I can be sure of in football is if you score 5 points, there's a safety involved.
That's true.
Pretty much. Unless they let you go for two after kicking the field goal for some reason. And what was the deal with? I didn't get this on the highlight. What happened to the Vanderbilt coach?
He got at the very end of the game. The game ended literally on a personal foul on him for being on the field and arguing or whatever. So
wow. Yeah. Oh well, I don't think it really. And 17-12 though. Wow. And then yeah, Tennessee, South Carolina, about what I expected. Tennessee was able to squeak. It was a squeaker.
But again, it was dumb. South Carolina kicked a field goal down. Whatever, 7, right? Mm-hmm. And then they held them, and then they punted. Tennessee had to punt, but then South Carolina had a guy not paying attention, and the punt hit him in the back, and Tennessee recovered, and that was the end of the game.
So yeah.
It was just really kind of dumb at the end.
Well, it's about what you'd expect for how that game should end, so.
Yes, but, you know, I think they're both okay. So.
Damn, yeah. I'm excited to talk about this coming week's games because it feels like we take a little bit of a step up. Certainly, our game is going to be we go from the Jefferson Pilot time slot of death to game day, right?
Yep.
We're like number 7. Georgia's number 4. We talked about that pretty thoroughly. Looking forward to that. That's the 6:30 game on ESPN. But South Carolina at Florida is my first, I think. I don't know if I did this last week.
My cold, dead hands.
Lock of the week.
Okay, I got the audio turned up a little high on the sound effect. Sorry about that. So, I think that surely South Carolina is going to feel down. Florida feels good. They know they scored 50-something on Ole Miss. I think they're going to beat the brakes off of South Carolina.
You did not employ the lock of death last week, so I'm glad to hear it's still in there.
Yeah, it's still in there. I didn't think about it, so I have to think about it. Yeah, do you feel the same way about South Carolina, Florida?
It's must champ against Florida. South Carolina, they'll make it uglier and closer than it needs to be, but you're in Florida's.
So 11 o'clock time slot of death game. That'll be fun. Missouri at Tennessee also. We have multiple time slot of death games. Yeah, Tennessee should win, but yeah. If Missouri does anything, you know, it'll be fun.
I'll take Tennessee by a lot there.
2:30, Texas A&M at Bama. That's going to get ugly, isn't it?
Texas A&M, better hope last week was a mirage. Or this is going to be like one of those, you know, second commercial break. You could turn it off and watch something else.
No kidding. Ole Miss at Kentucky. That could be fun because we know what Kentucky's got going on. And they'll be at home for their opener at home. But, man, Ole Miss. You know, Ole Miss. So
no, this is that 4 o'clock Eastern, 3 Central slot that Georgia Arkansas was in this past week, and this should be fun. I mean, a good Ole Miss offense and a bad Ole Miss defense against that Kentucky game will be an interesting, fun matchup.
A really, really ticked off, wet, angry, nasty LSU team goes to Vanderbilt, who played Texas A&M pretty tough. Does Vandy have a clue here, have a chance here, or is LSU just going to, like, go off on them ugly?
I think LSU is going to detonate on them. Now, Vandy got their moral victory last week. That was
got their moral victory. That's right, their immoral victory. And then finally, Arkansas at Mississippi State. Can Arkansas hang with Mississippi State like they did with Georgia for a while, or is Mississippi State going to open up a can of carpet bombing on them?
I'm going to put this down right now. Mississippi State does not throw for as many yards or points as they did against LSU.
Wow. Against Arkansas. Interesting.
Yes.
I got to get me a pirate sound effect. I can see that right now. Going forward, I'm going to need a pirate sound effect. All right. Well, we got this one in fairly decent amount of time here, about an hour 20 roughly. Any last thoughts from what was a pretty darn good Saturday, and it sounds like a pretty darn good one coming up, at least going in it should be fun. What do you think?
I'm like everybody else. I'm struggling with Georgia's the week two game, but I'm excited for it. I think this is the right. We've all said it's the better to play them early. It's a good to play them now, and I feel very confident in our defense in this game. Like I think they're gonna hold Georgia down and give us a real chance.
I feel good about it. I'm not going to say we absolutely win, but I feel like we have as good of a chance to win this game as any Auburn-Georgia game I can remember in a long time since, I guess, other than the 2017 game that we beat their brains in.
Right.
And I mean, and even if we lose by any chance, we happen to lose this game, we'll have plenty of time to get over it and worry about other games and then get ready for Alabama and the end of the season. So I kind of like the idea of getting it out of the way.
I agree 100%, but I also like Bo Nix playing, in the new offense, very confident, playing very well. And I think playing at Florida and LSU, is kind of preparing for this moment. So.
Yes, and it doesn't look like a new offense. It looks like they knew exactly what they were doing. That was kind of amazing to me.
Oh, yeah.
Credit to the coaches, credit to the players.
Yep. Real
awesome. Prepared. All right, our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @auwishbone and at facebook.com/auwishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.